At a rally today in Clarksville, Tennessee, Republican presidential candidate Bob Dole cited new evidence that economic growth is slowing as proof that the economy is not as strong as President Clinton says it is. The Commerce Department reported today that at the end of the summer, the U.S. economy was expanding at an annual rate of 2.2%. That's down from 4.7% in the previous 3 months. Dole called the slowdown disastrous news for low- and middle-income Americans, and he said exports and income growth have also fallen during the Clinton administration.
Now, what does that mean? It means that personal bankruptcies are up to a new record, over a million. Credit card debts never been higher. All these things have been mounting and mounting and mounting. At the same time, the economy is driving down wages at a time when families need to be keeping and saving more. So all this false and empty talk about the so-called Clinton recovery comes to an end. It ended today with today's announcement, take off the mask. It's not Halloween, but take off the mask. The economy is not good.
Bob Dole speaking today at Fort Campbell in Clarksville, Tennessee. The government also reported today that sales of new homes fell last month, though they're still running at the highest rate in a decade. Yet for many poor Americans, renting a home, much less buying one, is harder than ever before. According to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, more than 5 million families are now living in what's officially known as worst-case housing. That means they're either living in overcrowded substandard apartments or are paying more than half of what they earn in rent. Advocates for affordable housing warn that things could get worse as welfare reforms kick in and funding for public housing is cut. NPR's John Nielsen reports on worst-case housing in and around the nation's capital.
Hello, Mama.
Sandra Dyson stands in the doorway of a three-bedroom apartment in La Plata, Maryland, welcoming her children home from daycare. She's a single mother who's worked full-time for the last 8 years as an elementary school bus driver. After taxes, Dyson takes home roughly $1,200 a month. Dyson says half of that money goes to her landlord and another third goes to daycare. And what's left after she pays her other bills?
Nothing. Nothing. Time I pay my car payment, my car insurance, daycare, health insurance, food, clothes. I got about $15.
After you pay your expenses, that's what you get to spend.
Play money. Basically, I just work to pay bills. That's all I'm doing.
Out front, Dyson's neighbor is loading her car and moving out. Barbara Yancey says she just lost one of her two jobs, which means she can't meet the rent anymore. She's going to North Carolina to live in her mother's house.
I don't want to say anymore because I'm going to cry.
Roughly 20 families live in this federally subsidized apartment complex. Michael McCauley, the landlord, says most of them barely meet the rent. Even a tiny rent hike could put some of these families out on the street, McCauley says. But he also says the rent must rise to keep up with heating and maintenance costs.
It's inevitable that things gradually creep up. And if the expenses are going up faster than the people's income, then the squeeze on them becomes greater, and the likelihood of their getting behind, getting in default, and having eventually to face eviction.
According to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, scenes like this are being played out all over the country these days, as more and more poor people find it harder and harder to keep roofs over their heads. Henry Cisneros, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, says it's a problem that alarms him.
While I'm generally an optimistic person about all the things that we're trying to do at HUD, we've increased homeless funding and are trying to address homelessness, and we're working to reform public housing, and we're investing in communities and our empowerment zones, and a host of other things that we're doing. This is an area that I am very worried about.
The most recent HUD study of this subject shows that 5.3 million American families fall into the worst-case housing category, an all-time high. Some of these families were found to be living in overcrowded tenements without bathrooms or kitchens. Many more live in decent but barely affordable apartments. Elderly people and families headed by a single parent are most at risk, the study says. According to Cisneros, a housing crisis is at hand.
What it says is we face a very grim situation of families who are not going to be able to afford housing, of homelessness that will grow, of cities that will be in crisis, if we allow the present trends to continue unabated.
Housing experts say the worst-case housing problem has been building quietly since the Reagan years, when the federal government stopped expanding the country's notoriously mismanaged public housing system. The problem grew as city councils voted to tear down inner-city housing to make way for office towers and convention centers. It grew some more as successive Congresses voted to limit rental subsidies. The cost of building new housing was rising all the while. Wages paid the working poor stayed flat when they weren't falling. Today, in cities like the District of Columbia, these trend lines seem to be converging.
Did you get your food today?
If I had a lot.
Did you get your food today?
Yes, I had it.
You got your food. Okay, good.
Bread and Z is a nonprofit Washington clearinghouse for poor people who need everything from winter clothes to psychiatric treatment. At this time of year, calls from people trapped in worst-case housing begin rising sharply, staffers say. Susan Kerna, a social worker, says some of these problems seem unimaginably bad.
20 minutes ago, I was sitting with a woman that's stuck in an extremely abusive situation. She can't wait 6 months for a shelter, so she protects herself by mutilating herself.
What do you mean?
He'll stop hitting her if she'll hurt herself first. And today we tried to call a bunch of numbers and find a place to stay, even temporarily. Her family already has other family. They're maxed out. Housing is the one resource she needs now, and it's not there.
Alicia Wilson, another social worker, says she's been getting a lot of calls these days from desperate families. Some of them have been evicted. Some are about to be evicted. Most are looking for temporary homeless shelters. Wilson says she tells all of these people to expect to wait 6 months.
And that's a really scary situation. And I just don't know if people know that children are out in the streets probably more than grown men are.
Right now, is that's sort of the change that in your view has taken place? We're moving from an era of homeless men to homeless families?
Well, there still are a whole bunch of homeless men, but the kinds of needs that shelters have to fill for families is much more intense than they have to fill for single men or single women. And so there are a lot of shelters less likely to take on families than they are to take on single men and women.
Housing activists and urban Democrats want the federal government to fight the worst-case housing problem by increasing rental subsidies and funding the construction of more low-income housing. Fiscal conservatives and private builders want exemptions from regulations that drive up labor and construction costs. By most accounts, debates like these could go unresolved for years. Meantime, around the country, some small-scale remedies are being tested. In northeastern Washington, for instance, carpenters working for a nonprofit organization called MANA ripped the floorboards out of the third floor of an abandoned apartment building. Jim Dickerson, MANA's director, says this place used to be a hellhole.
Syringes and bottles and all sorts of paraphernalia laying around. In one instance, he had a tree growing out of the roof.
But by spring, Dickerson says, this building will have been rebuilt and sold to low-income people living in the Washington area. Most of these people will be the first in their families ever to own a home.
That's a hard thing for many people in America to understand because of the great American dream and how many people have owned homes in America, but in the District of Columbia here, there are many, many people who didn't ever believe they could own a home unless they hit the number or married a millionaire.
Around the country, nonprofit groups like Habitat for Humanity and MANA are busy turning thousands of similar buildings into habitable, affordable places to live. A good start, by most accounts, but nowhere near enough to solve this problem. I'm John Nielsen in Washington.